Welcome to our Agile Tales, where we share the various successes and trials we've encountered as we navigate corporate levels and political waters to transform the business to be adaptable to this forever changing world.
We are continuing our conversations with Natale Denk, a workplace, culture, and people development expert. She is a pioneer in the Agile HR movement and coaches clients across all industries, ranging from tech to nonprofits to global banks. In 2017, she co-founded the Agile HR Community and in 2020, co-authored the pioneering book, Agile in HR. If you missed our previous episodes, we suggest revisiting them first. Otherwise, we're happy to have you here as we embark on further exploring Agile in HR on our Agile Tales.
Hello, Natale. Thank you for coming back onto our podcast, our Agile Tales. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Lovely to be here.
Hi, Natale. I have one more question about diversity and inclusion. Most people still think that diversity, equity, and inclusion is all about race, gender, religion, sexual orientation, and such. But what about emerging diversity issues, you know, like supporting neurodivergent people? How do you make HR aware that that is something to consider or these new emerging things are coming up? How do you make HR aware so that HR can build that capability and then eventually build that capability into the organization?
It's a, you know, really good question. And my partner is neurospicy, as we like to call it. I feel this is a really interesting kind of newer field in the sense that it's unfortunate that that kind of difference hasn't been as respected as it needs to be in the past. And we're having more awareness around it. That's also because we've got better data and science and things like that, I think, around it as well. There's a lot of people that are older that have had this all their lives and have only realized now, where younger generations being either diagnosed or able to understand these things earlier on. I think the younger generation is just better at all of this because there's this idea of it's not about having to accept difference. It's that, you know, difference is just part of life. So I think it's understanding the different parts of your workforce and how you help them have more awareness around this and understand how people can have very different experiences. This is where there's been some really interesting things around, like VR, people using VR to help others, you know, put your VR headset and experience what it's like to be discriminated against or to do something with a different type of neurodiversity. So there's lots of interesting kind of training techniques and kind of ways that you can open up the discussion now. But I was talking with a people team just the last couple of weeks, and I was helping them think about capability development. And one of the ones that we decided was really important was we called it cultural intelligence. And so it was this idea that if you are a people partner or a HR business partner, a key capability now is to understand difference, be able to kind of recognize it, have a conversation about it. I don't think I get it right, you know, like and you don't know your own biases. So it's also being able to be kind of quite honest and open about these things and talk about it. It's doing things such as being conscious about your language. So how do you be open to the idea of using they and them rather than a gender pronoun and things like this? So it's actually helping yourself develop the capability to understand distance, see it, and then have a conversation about how you help that person work in the best way they can. I think you'll see more of that in kind of general HR development, hopefully, going forward. It's seeming to be more and more recognized as a skill that HR professionals should have.
I am really curious now. It's a completely different topic, but since HR should be focused on the people, as you said, then in your opinion, should HR be decentralized and sit with the various groups of people, or should HR remain a centralized function?
I don't think there's one model. I think it's about exploring how to do it well for the organization that it's in. I think no matter what, however, is that HR needs to become much more of a multi-skilled kind of multifunctional team and not be sort of a group of all these sort of single topic owners and have much more of a T-shaped approach. and whether that sits in the business, you know, there's actually pros and cons. So what I've seen that model, what can happen, however, is each part of the business move forward with their own sort of people initiatives and don't necessarily join up with other parts of the business. And therefore that maybe decreases the ability for people to move careers within the business, or there's different types of experiences happening. And so there's often a need to at least have some common parameters and values and ways that you make either salary decisions or benefits, because that allows movement and flexibility in the organization. Why should someone in the sales team or customer service team not be able to access similar kind of benefits or career opportunities as someone in the tech area? So that's the one danger with that kind of model, but it can work really well. I don't think HR needs to be an entity in itself, but what I think is that the people side of business does need some representation. So whether that is teams that come from the business that sort of look after those kind of elements, or there's a conscious decision of teams making their own hiring and sort of workplace benefits decisions because that's enabled at that level. So there's some really nice models out there that are linked to things like Holacracy and things like that. But the main thing is just not understand, I suppose, the pros and cons of different models, and don't just go after the model, create a model that's good for the organization and what you're trying to achieve, rather than sort of just saying, oh, well, we're going to do this. You know, HR is now going to sit in the business in this way. That's got to be fixing a problem. That's got to be done for a reason. For teams that stay together as sort of a HR function, then I think they need to be more of a T-shaped team and be thinking much more about how do they work in multi-skilled ways to solve prioritized problems and, you know, have a sort of that product development mindset, rather than this sort of, you know, one person looks after recruitment, one person looks after diversity, equity, inclusion, one person looks after reward, because that's very inefficient. It doesn't get you anywhere. And most HR products and solutions require all those skills to actually achieve an outcome.
So talking about HR being more product-minded, how does then HR find out or know, since the product is the people or the people experience, how does HR actually find out what employees' needs are or what their pains are?
Through user research. When I work with teams, I say, you know, for any particular situation, you need to have done at least three methods of research. People data, either something like experience mapping or personas or some empathy interviews, and then something like you could do external research, or you can do observations or do focus groups. So a bit of qualitative and quantitative data. And that can be done depending on the size of your project, you know, that you can do that in a more in-depth way, or you can just do it fairly quickly, but you make sure you understand the situation, pull out key insights, and then create a couple of key problem statements that feed off those insights, and then think about how would you go about solving those problem statements. So that's generally how I would advise people to do it.
How about surveys? Because the companies I worked in, and also that my colleagues are working in, survey seems to be the go-to method for HR for anything.
Yeah. Well, I always challenge teams to think about how to do it without doing a survey. Surveys are good, but they're opinion, lots of opinions. So you're like, you kind of more longer term engagement survey is sort of a current state kind of analysis of people saying, this is what I think at this moment in time. Usually the better surveys are linked more to the outcomes of initiatives or situations, or maybe there's been an end of a project. Okay, now let's ask everybody, how did it go for them? What behaviors worked well? What tools worked well? What didn't? How would you change it next time? And what does that mean? So people often need an experience to feed off with a survey. Otherwise, surveys generally give you sort of thoughts and opinions that you then still need to kind of dig into deeper. So doing an engagement survey doesn't mean that's engagement. It just means you've collected views and opinions on what it's like to work there at that point in time.
If you're looking at HR to be sort of product-minded, can you refresh the minds of our listeners? Who are then the end customer for HR then? Is that the employees? Is that the business? I mean, who are they?
For me, there's sort of layers to that, but ultimately your first customer is employees or, you know, different parts of your employee group, depending on what the product is. But then it's understanding how that product helps those employees get the job done. So there is that flow through to the business bottom line and ultimately the end customer. And so when you're thinking about that product and you're thinking about releasing it into the business, you know, where does it sit? How do people use it? Who looks after it going forward? And you want that to be as much sort of in the flow of work as opposed to sort of this add-on, because you don't want it to get in the way of people delivering value ultimately through to the end customer. And really everything should be helping you get the job done. So it's thinking about those layers when you work on solutions.
Brilliant. Thank you so very much. You mentioned the first customer for HR are the employees, are the people. Let's talk about developing those people. What is HR's role in employees' learning and development? And when I say employees, it includes executives. And I'm going to add another question. How would HR approach learning and development in sort of an agile manner? What would that look like?
So again, it's a really big question. So we talk a lot about how do you help people sort of own their career as such. So I think an organization can be looking at how do you help people access skills development, experiences, and opportunities so they can continuously grow? And there's lots of models out there like the 70-20-10 of, you know, people learn best on the job, and then that 70% and then 20% is talking about it and communicating around it, and then 10% is classroom learning. So there's lots of evidence to show that classroom learning or digital e-learning or whatever kind of solution you're putting out there by itself won't necessarily always deliver the outcomes that you're after. But there's a mixture of that. Like anything, often you're trying to solve problems. And so, you know, if you think more about learning and development as kind of a business impact, how do you create environments that people can easily access the skills and opportunities to develop the skills that needed to then help the business achieve certain strategy, then you're going to be able to kind of put that kind of solution together in better ways. So there was a learning and development team that saw that managers didn't have time to go to these two-day programs that they had running to develop management skills. And they went, okay, what if we just let go of some of the parameters that we always think we need to deliver against, which is, you know, we must have face-to-face programs, we must have cohorts, people must learn a series of skills, and let's just go and find out what is going on for these managers. And they found out that managers talk about problems to solve. Oh, I need to hire someone tomorrow and I don't know how to do it. I need to give feedback tomorrow and I don't know how to do it. So they started to look at how do they get small, more bite-sized solutions to these managers more around the times that they might have these problems. And then they started to build it out from there. So it ultimately equaled more of a digital solution, but it was also a solution that people could go to maybe a 90-minute workshop, or they could speak to a coach, or they could get a mentor. But they tried to create the learning around solving these problems. And I think that's a really nice example of how do you understand what you're trying to achieve with your learning and development outcomes? And how do you make it really easy for people to kind of source that and get involved in that? You know, and we talk a lot about how do you build the motivation around learning? And we know that people need to want to learn. And usually if you connect it to that person solving a problem for themselves because they want to be able to do a certain task or have a better conversation or design a strategy in a certain way. So if you talk more about the problems you're solving for people with the learning that you're designing, then generally you can get a better outcome. If you take that back to product design, how do you then think about the product you're creating as solving the problems and delivering that kind of value rather than it just being a learning program that people go and attend?
You have opened my eyes today, Natal, for sure. I mean, a very different way to approach hiring, a very different way of approaching learning and development. It's wow. I have one more question because you talk about building trust. I'm just curious, what in your mind, what is the relationship or is there a relationship between trust and agile ways of working?
Yeah, definitely. It's that how do you build an environment where people can trust each other to make adult decisions? So it would, you know, even in a retrospective, you know, there's often the, was it Las Vegas rules or something? what's said in this room is, you know, and that everyone's made the best decision they could based on the information they had at that point in time. So I think it's about how do you aim to have a adult to adult environment where people can trust each other with decisions and that they're leading with the best intent. And I think agile ways of working can really help you achieve that. But like I said earlier, don't expect that agile instantly gives that. If you're not conscious of the team, you need to challenge people to think beyond just the activity of an agile ceremony or something like that, don't you? People need to help people be conscious of how they're interacting with each other. How do they respect difference and diversity? How do they ensure there's a sense of belonging? And I'm not sure if we actually teach that in agile. I feel like that's more around coaching and, you know, being a good facilitator or being a good communicator. Maybe we need to be very conscious of bringing those techniques into how we do agile for it to get better outcomes.
Wow, this is very inspiring, Natal. I mean, there's a lot that you just said. You widened our perspective on agile in HR and how it can help organizations achieve better outcomes. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
We're happy you joined us on our journey with Natal Denk. This concludes our series on Agile in HR. Join us for our next podcast series with Mirko Kleiner, a thought leader in Lean Agile Procurement. We will be talking about the next stage of business agility, scaling Agile across companies.
Thank you so much for listening to our Agile Tales. Feel free to ping us on ouragiletales.com.